Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and welcome to Yada Yah Radio and to our Shabbat program this evening. It's just Kirk and I here today. We are going to spend most of the program talking about Yeshaya, Isaiah 9, 6, and 9, 7. But there are a couple of related issues that I would like to pluck from the news. The first of those is that they have now published, your government at work, if you're an American, has now published a couple of the ads that the Russians bought to interfere with the U.S. election. Are you aware of that, Kirk?
I have heard.
Have you seen either of those two ads? Oh, they're beautiful.
No, I don't think so.
One of the two ads that appealed to the alt-right and that they ran in social media was a picture of a red-horned dude with scaly skin representing Satan. Arm wrestling with a Jesus-like figure, you know, with the Roman nose, really handsome in his pretty robes. And so they had Satan arm wrestling with Jesus, and Satan is quoted as saying, "If I win, Clinton wins." And then Jesus says, "Not if I can stop you."
And that's going to affect somebody? Who thinks that?
If you think that occurred, you are too stupid to vote.
Yeah.
You are just way too stupid. You know, if as Americans, if you realize that's what the Russians produced as an act, and that influenced America's presidential election, then you ought to just sit down and cry, because that means that Americans are so ignorant, so stupid, so easily swayed that there's no hope for the country anyway. Now, the second one, and for that, it really does matter who's in the White House, because it was an airplane in the background, a coffin in the foreground, and a widow in black leaning over, staged as a model, of course, kissing the coffin with a American flag draped over it. Matters who's in the White House. Now, if you are so stupid that you don't know that Americans were sent over to die by the thousands, and some 250,000 Americans have taken their own lives upon their return to Afghanistan and Iraq, and now Syria, to make a bad situation infinitely worse by a Republican president, George W. I just love torture Bush, unless I'm accused of it, in which case I'll let other people go to prison for my own decisions. If you can't figure that out, that person, if there is the scene that is depicted, died because a Republican president was despicable and deliberately lied to the American people to justify what he wanted to do, which was to be a wartime president, so that boys and girls came back in body bags, and you can't figure that out, shame on you. Now, the other thing I'd like to talk about is the media just can't figure out what Allahu Akbar means. But you would think that to be in the media, you'd have had to have gone to college, wouldn't you?
You'd think you'd have a degree for some reporting from something.
You'd think that you'd have some level of proficiency in language if you're going to write or speak as part of the media.
Wouldn't
you think that'd be the kind of the baseline, some proficiency in language?
You would think.
So the idiotic Muslim playing jihadist goes in New York, and he uses his car. It's not the gun, folks. It's the motivation that matters. And he uses his car to run up on a bike path, running path in New York, to maim and murder a bunch of innocent people. The very fact that somebody drives a car deliberately to kill and maim innocent people, that tells you this person is a Muslim.
Yeah.
Now, is there the possibility that it's not a Muslim? Yeah, there are some people that are going on and off psychiatric drugs that don't have a motivation, but they have a cause for their horrible behavior. But they're the minority.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of people who kill innocent people that they do not know, unarmed people who cannot defend themselves, are Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he confessed to the crime, as did all of the 9/11 Islamic jihadists, suicide bombers. You know how they confessed to the crime, Kirk? How this guy confessed to the crime?
They said, Allahu Akbar, for one.
There you go. That's the confession. That is why we're doing this. Where do you find an Allah?
Only in one religion.
There you go.
Islam.
Yeah. Allah is the God of Islam, period. Full stop. Mm-hmm. That is not the Arabic word for God. Arabic is derived from Hebrew. Uses the same alphabet.
Al-O-L.
Right. In fact, almost every important word in Arabic is Hebrew, including the name of their book, the Quran. It's from Kara, the Hebrew verb that means to read and to recite. Ilah from Eloah is the Arabic word for God. Allah is one of the Islamic God's names. Akbar is a Arabic word that conveys three things: larger,
greater,
older,
powerful. Yeah.
So I should say older, larger, and greater, the same concept. So larger, greater is one of the concepts. Older is the is another of the concepts. What the purpose of that is to say that Allah has been around longer than the other fellow that some people refer to as God.
Yeah.
That Allah is more powerful, bigger and greater than the other fellow that is considered God. Akbar is a comparative term. So there has to be more than one God to use Akbar. Now, Muslims are way too stupid to figure that out. That you can't have a monotheistic religion where your divine messenger tells you to say Allahu Akbar, because that's nonsensical if there's only one God. One God can't be greater
than
another God If there's
unless you're a Greek,
God,
you know, and then you have right. multiple gods fighting in the heavens.
Right.
And, yeah.
So if Allah is bigger, mm-hmm. older, greater, that's what Allahu Akbar means. Then you so you have to say, greater than whom? And how would you go about figuring out who Allah is allegedly older, been around longer, greater, bigger, more powerful than? Where would you go?
Well, I would go to figure out, of course, I know the answer to these questions. But, you know, where did he say it first? You know, what was the context?
Correct.
What
is the context that Allahu Akbar was first shouted? It happens to be the Islamic raid of Kabar. Muhammad went down to Mecca for the express purpose of conquering his hometown. And he got jelly feet on the way down. And he thought he had full underarms, and he recanted everything. He said, okay, I'm not really Allah's messenger. You know, I'll stop terrorizing Meccans. I'll stop robbing you Meccans. I'll leave you alone for 10 years. And he just went back with his tail between his legs. And the jihadists along with him, they weren't in it for the religion. They were in it for the booty.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. Because every place that Muhammad took them, including their intent to Mecca, was armed robbery and rape and the enslavement of children. That was their intent. And while Muhammad capitulated, Muhammad had a mutiny on his hands. So there was only one Jewish community that he hadn't already hunted down, abused, and plundered, Kabar. And so he went to Kabar, where the Jewish community came out with their agricultural implements because they were farmers, and Muhammad showed up with his men fully armed. And that's where Allahu Akbar was first used by Muhammad. Muhammad looked at him, and they looked at him and said, what do you want us to do and what to say now that they're coming out with their hoes and their shovels? And Muhammad said, tell those Ya'ud, Allahu Akbar. And so they shouted, Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater than the God of the Jews. That means that Allah is greater than Yahweh. That's Satan's. That's what Satan covets and craves more than anything else. Once you know what Muhammad told those jihadists to say, and where he told them to say it, and to whom they said it, you know that Allah is Satan. You understand the purpose of the message. All it takes is a little research. After all, aren't journalists supposed to be researchers?
Well, you would think they would dig out a story. That was the old
aren't myth. Most of them English majors? Don't you think they can pick up a copy of the Hadith and the Quran and read them?
Well, you would think, I mean, not only your book, I mean, think about Aki Rizzoli. I mean, it's the lifting of the veil.
Right. This stuff isn't hidden.
No.
It's in your face.
If you want to know,
it's irrefutable.
You know.
Quit it. But, you know, if you can't render the words accurately, in fact, if you go the next step and deliberately mislead, deliberately render the words and evidence inaccurately, what chance is there that anyone's going to understand what's going on?
Almost none.
Yeah, none. You have no chance whatsoever to figure things out. That's the problem with English Bible translations.
Why is it?
Even if somebody were saying, you know, I think I'm going to go and read that Old Testament, it's so poorly translated that it's extraordinarily difficult, almost impossible, to figure out who God is, what he wants, what he's offering, what he has to say. And I would say,
No, I was. I've been doing 9-6, of course, but I went through Psalms 22-29, and it struck me. I was looking up for a particular reason for a question that Terry had, and I was reading the thing where he goes on about he's talking about two different groups of people. Obviously, his family who rises up, they revere him, and the people who don't, who are bowed down on their knees. Yet
right.
They translate it the same way when there's two different words. There's kara, K-A-R-A, bowing down on the knees, and that's the people who don't have, will not be able to save their soul. And then they use the same translation for to revere, which is shaka.
Yeah.
And it's like right in your face. And I say, well, if I could find that in a few minutes, and I mean, really,
right.
It's just a few minutes.
Right.
What's so hard? And you
right.
couldn't have both people, both things saying bow down.
Right.
Unless you really want to emphasize bow. If they're bowing down and he's going to obliterate them or judge
yeah.
them,
mm-hmm.
and these people are the ones he loves and they're bowing down,
mm-hmm.
what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
well,
and
another great example, we're going to talk about Yeshaya, Isaiah 9:6 and 9:7. And in so doing, we're going to put the final nail in the coffin of the religion of Christianity. This is as devastating as anything you could ever reveal about the religion. And I would, before we even begin, and we're going to sneak up on it by reading 9:1 through 9:5 first, but when it says that one of the names is going to be Almighty God, first I would ask you, is Almighty God a name?
No.
No. Is the word for Almighty in the text?
There's one for mighty, Gabor.
Well,
that's Almighty. Yeah.
Gabor is not mighty in terms of a reference ever. Is a reference to God. Gabor is a reference to strong men, to valiant men, to
mighty
warriors,
you know,
political leaders, and war heroes. That's what Gabor is.
But, you know,
so it doesn't say Almighty God. It says a military man on behalf of God, a political man on behalf of God, a strong and courageous leader on behalf of God. Not Almighty God. There's another one that's Misra. It only appears twice. Its root appears a third time, but it's all three times, including Misra, only twice, in one place. In the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it appears one place. So the only way that you've got any chance of defining this word is to go to its root and to use the context. And it's always, say, the government will be on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be no end to his government. Is there any, even hint of government in Misra?
No.
So the only reason that it's rendered government is because the people that were publishing and promoting these errant Bible translations wanted their governments to be established by God and to endure forever.
Right. Well, remember,
they wanted God's endorsement for government, and that's why the word was changed to government. It's just why Gabor, which means strong, valiant man, was changed to Almighty and became an adjective to describe God, because they wanted the Son who was given to be Almighty God. Otherwise, you don't have a religion anymore. These were not only deliberately mistranslated. I mean, there is not a single Hebrew scholar engaged in translation that doesn't know that both things that I've just mentioned are true. And yet, the publications say otherwise, revealing the heart and soul of the deception that is religion, the deception that is politics, and how they've joined forces all of these years to work together in collaboration to deceive so the people don't know.
Well, you'd have to spend some time to do it, to get it out, just to get situated. But it's there. It's just.
Yeah, it takes no question about it. It takes some time. You got to be able to work at it. You know, it's interesting. I was just translating for probably a third time. I've done this now, but Moshe is original meeting with Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the sign to Moshe was that Yahweh had solicited him to go and extract his people from Egypt. Do you know what the sign was?
Well, let's see. You had the fire on the mountain.
Well, that wasn't signed on, according to Yahweh.
No.
By the way, the fire was on a sharp rocky crag. That's the word that's is translated burning bush. The only place it's actually described, it's described as a sharp rocky crag. Interesting. God actually tells Moshe what the sign is. He says the sign is you're going to work with me, Abad. You are going to work with me on this mountain. He was at Choreb.
Well, that's right, because he promised him
right
to come back and tell him this when he did the first thing. Yeah, of course,
right.
Of course.
Yeah, yes. You know why that was the sign?
Well, that's going to give
all of us
Torah
today. Yeah, it hasn't changed.
No.
The sign for all of us today. How do you know that God has solicited you to serve him? How do you know? How do you know that is true? What's the proof? Are you working with him? If you're working with him, based upon what was revealed on that mountain, there you go. That's the answer.
Well, it's Shabbat Torah. That's been my key the whole time. If I'm doing this, and the Mori Mikros, but see, I have an advantage. I listen to Dode.
A wise thing is
those 22 standards with eight.
The 119th psalm. 22 stanzas of eight statements each of the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in alphabetical order, explaining how each letter contributes to our understanding of the Torah. It is exactly what Yosha meant when he said that every jot and tittle will continue to exist and shall not be done away with so long as the heavens and earth exist. It was Yod, which is the smallest letter. Tittles are the strokes that comprise the other letters. That's the was referring to the essence of the 119th Psalm. Let's begin and read 9:1 through 9:5. And as we read this, there is a part of it that's going to seem really uncomfortable. And it's in 9, right in the middle of it, really, that is uncomfortable because it's masculine singular. And I've ended up having to rewrite, I've spent all day today and most of yesterday rewriting the first 20-some-odd pages of this chapter to deal with the fact that it is masculine singular, speaking of a singular Gentile. But that's the way it's written, and we're not at liberty to change the way it's written.
Hmm.
Nevertheless, there will be... nevertheless, that should be a pretty good clue that this flows out of what was written right before it.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, there will be no sadness or gloomy darkness for those who were subjected and subjugated and oppressed. This for her is a contrast to the previous time when he receded from the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. Now, I would ask you a couple of questions that seem fairly obvious here.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any gloomy darkness in the world today?
Quite a lot.
Yeah. And how about then Israel? Any terrorism, any threats?
There's some very serious concerns in Israel.
Yeah, a lot of sadness, a lot of gloomy darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So this is futurism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the next part I would make is, for this is in contrast to the previous time when he receded from, withdrew from, the land of Zebulun and Naphtali. What does recede from mean?
To pull away from.
There you go. So if Yahweh pulled away from the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, that means that he withdrew, even from Israel. Right,
yes,
withdrew from them.
Mm-hmm. You're on your own.
Right, you're on your own. And those are his chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
And he withdrew from them. Now, when it says, by contrast to the previous time, what does that mean relative to withdrew?
Well, then he was with them before.
That means he was with them before, and now this new situation, when there will be no more darkness or gloom, no more subjugation or oppression, that means that he is returning, doesn't it?
Returning, of course.
Yes, and where is he returning?
To Jerusalem and Israel.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so that's what you can learn just in the first half of 9-1. And thereafter, following that, he will severely and harshly deal with the stubborn and irrational, the pretentious and oppressive nature of the way of the sea, on the opposing side of the Yarden, the Jordan, concerning the socio-political realm of the Gentile nations. William.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so first things first.
All over but
no more gloom, no more darkness, no more subjugation, no more oppression, and no more estrangement for Yisrael. Second part is, those people that were responsible for subjugating Yisrael, for oppressing Yisrael, for harming God's chosen people, are going to be held accountable. Yahweh is going to deal severely and harshly with them. Why? Because the Goyim nations have been stubborn and irrational, pretentious and oppressive. And so God's going to deal harshly with them. There is a consequence for these things.
You're going to let somebody come in and push your children around?
Yeah. Now, if you are, that's exactly right. You're going to hold them accountable. And if you were, I was talking last night, and I've said this, I think, on the show before, and I'm a nonviolent person.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few things that would cause me to be violent. You know, knowing somebody had harmed in a enduring way one of my children. You know, if I had a daughter, I don't, but I have a granddaughter. If my granddaughter's raped, and I know for certain who the rapist was, I would kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd kill them. Scar my granddaughter for life. You're going to pay a price. I don't even care what the consequence is to me. If I was Fred Goldman, and you knew for absolute certain, which we do, that O.J. Simpson murdered his son, I'd kill him. I know there'd be a consequence. I'd lose my freedom. I'd kill him. And I'm not, and I'm the kind of person that says, we don't have the right. And I may not even have the right to do that. It's still what I would do. Yahweh is not all that different from us in the sense of these people raped and imprisoned and enslaved and murdered his children. They mocked them.
Sold them into slavery. Everything, you name it.
Sold them into slavery. Put them in concentration camps. Hauled them away with rings in their noses. Well, destroyed his family home, destroyed his favorite city, salted the earth, burned every copy they could find of his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He's going to hold them accountable. He's going to deal severely with them, as any loving father is wont to do. Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you were concerned about what is the way of the sea, that's explained. The socio-political realm of the Gentile nations, Goyim.
The sea is always the massive numbers of Gentiles. Always.
Exactly. That's what it refers to. The family of related people, this is now Am, this is God's children, the family of related people who have walked in darkness and error. So, Yahweh realizes that Well, he loves his children. They have been less than.
Yeah. Sometimes he just can't get through to them no matter what. So
no.
Turns out.
Yeah. So the family of related people who have walked in darkness and error will see an appearance of a great and expansive light. Now, Christians will tell you that, well, that was Jesus. He was the light of God. That was Jesus. Did Jesus appear as light?
No. He appeared as an ordinary man.
Yeah. Born as an ordinary man. We're told he's born as an ordinary man. And lived as an ordinary man until the time he was 30, when he stood in this Jordan River. And Yohanan, the immerser, dunked him in the water, which is a symbol of life, born of water, and a symbol of cleansing. And the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him, and that's when Yahweh said, "This is my Son, of whom I am proud." Now, prior to that, he was just an ordinary man. He became the diminished manifestation of God at that very moment by way of the set-apart Spirit. Was he, did he appear as light?
No, sir.
No. There is a report, I don't know if it's true or not, because we can't trust the Christian New Testament, that he appeared to three people as light, but it doesn't say here that three people are going to see him as light, you know, with the Mount of Transfiguration. It says the family who have walked in darkness will see an appearance of a little light.
No, this will be a big light.
A great and expansive light. This has not occurred. This is not talking about Jebus. That's just the facts, folks.
Yeah.
You're entitled to your opinion. You're not entitled to your own set of facts. For those who have lived in the realm of foreboding darkness, in the shadow of death, the light will shine on them. Well, the light has not shone on them. Has it?
No, still future events.
Yeah, still talking about a future event. You have improved, and this is Yashaya speaking on behalf. So he's, you know, it's like Dode. You know, almost everything Dode says is, she's speaking about God. This is Yashaya, Yahweh's inspired prophet speaking on Yahweh's behalf. You have improved and prolonged the life of a goy. Goy, singular. Mm-hmm. What is goy? Gentile, right?
Goyim, Gentile.
Yeah. Well, goyim would be Gentiles or Gentile nations. Goy is singular, Gentile. Now, some people would say, oh, no, goy can be people. Yeah, it's people disassociated from Israel, disassociated from the family. Right? Goy is the term that is used to differentiate people and nations from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are times when Yahweh refers to Israel as goy. But the times that he's doing that, it's when Israel is estranged and when they have emulated and copied the way of Gentiles.
Then they are goy
and,
for all.
Right, so he says, you know, you're acting like goy, I'm going to call you goy.
You want to be them, you're them. Okay,
yeah,
so
that's right. You want to be goyim, I'm going to call you goyim. In this particular case, they're no longer estranged. He just told you, I return to them.
Yeah.
He's just called them my family. He is now using goy. It cannot apply to Israel in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And it most certainly can't be Gentile nations because it's singular. Yeah. It's a singular, masculine individual. That's where I said it gets uncomfortable. And it gets uncomfortable until you go back and you realize that the clue here is Midian. And then you go back and you search the story of the first time we hear about Midian. And you know when that is? Moshe. Moshe. He had left the religious and political realm of the crucibles of leprosy and affliction and oppression. And he fled to the land of the Midian. That's where he went.
Of course, yes.
So that's when we hear about them. And so if you read the story of how Yahweh came to, and this is going to say, you know, you want to understand this, you need to understand this is similar to the day of Midian.
Mm-hmm.
You go and you read what happened there, and you realize that Yahweh solicited one guy to work with him to convey his name and his word to his people so as to free them from religious and political oppression. What's different now?
Well, I think...
Relative to his people and them?
He's always working with an individual.
Right. Always.
I mean, they may have some helpers, but they're, you know... It was,
they always... You know, Moshe had helpers.
Sure.
But Yahweh didn't go to Aaron, one of the helpers, and say, Aaron, I want you to work with... No. Moshe. Moshe got helpers.
Yeah.
Now, why would we expect God to deal with this opportunity to save his people from religious and political influences so that he can return to them and bring them back to the land? Why would we expect him to act differently now than he did then?
No, point taken.
That's why it's goy singular. Now, we need to keep in mind here when Moshe says, who am I that you would send me? Did Yahweh blow smoke up old Moshe's posterior section?
No.
Did he give Moshe a single reason that he was somehow special or qualified for this job? No. The answer
is...
That's all you need to know is that I'm going to be with you.
That's what he told Midian to.
Yeah.
Told Midian the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Gideon.
Yeah. That's the answer. I didn't pick.
I'm with you.
You don't have any qualifications that would cause me to choose you. None. You're only qualified because I'm going to be with you. That's the answer.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, though. That's nice.
Yeah, pretty cool. Now, Moshe did have one qualification. It really wasn't a qualification as it was a bit of history.
Yeah.
God really despises religion and politics and economic systems based upon lord, serf, control, fascist, top-down, communist, socialist. He doesn't like that stuff.
No.
He doesn't like militarism either. And so, if he picked anyone on earth other than Moshe, Yahweh would have to have explained what he was going to encounter there and why God hated it.
Yeah.
With Moshe?
Moshe, not only knew
it was there, he was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the government. He was in the military. He was part of it.
He did
and best of all, he had chosen to leave it because he was disgusted by it. Right?
Yeah. Right.
That is the thing that made Moshe the person that God selected. He wanted to choose somebody who he didn't have to take the time to explain why he hated religion or what he was going to encounter in Egypt because it was so disgusting to him, somebody that he already knew had chosen to leave it.
Mm-hmm.
So, if God's going to choose somebody today, if they're going to be consistent, that person would have been engaged in religion. They would have been engaged in politics. They would have been patriotic. They would have engaged in the common workplace.
Right.
Would know all of those things and would have chosen to leave them.
I know somebody like that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and by the way, that isn't much of a qualification. But this is so you have improved and prolonged the life of a goy, a Gentile, increasing and nurturing his joy. Cheerfully, he rejoices in your presence and before your appearance, similar to the jubilation of the ingathering during the harvest, just as he will be ecstatic when he shares the spoil, apportioning the property and possessions he has gained. Now, I want to tell you, over the course of these many years, I have said there's one thing that I actually covet. Well, there's two things I actually covet. I've said I might be completely honest. I said I want to be a witness at. I don't, you know, obviously I'm not going to be as good as Yahweh's messengers, but I still want to. I would still enjoy the opportunity to be more than just a witness. To be an actual witness at Paul's and Muhammad's trials. I'd even like to be a hater in Israel. I would just like to be able to kick the dirty scumbag around with. Yeah. I think I've earned the opportunity to do it. I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to do it or not, but I would like to have that opportunity.
Okay. And when you go to court, I'll carry your briefcase.
I think it'd be fun to do. You know, they're not going to hurt any more people, and I'd like them to.
See what it's like on the other side. Yeah.
You betcha. Okay, so I wanted that, and the second thing I've said is I really want to have the opportunity to be in the room in the presence during the harvest, where I'm sitting there in the back of the room, you know, just trying to be on my tippy toes and kind of look around the crowd that's there, and I want to be able to see the expression on Yahweh's face as he greets you for the first time. We'll see it.
I think he'll let you do that.
I want to enjoy that moment. I want to share that moment.
Well, you deserve that.
Absolutely. Isn't that what this is talking about?
Yeah.
Carefully,
well,
rejoices
in
your presence
before
him. Yeah, similar to the jubilation of the ingathering during the harvest. Yep. Now, the other thing that I've said I'm looking forward to, it's not... not so much a part of a wish list. I'm just because we all get the same thing. I'm just looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
Is knowing that the universe was created for us, and it's all ours. And we not only get to go out and explore it, we have the opportunity to do experiments and conduct our own not only investigations, but the whole process of exploring creativity.
Well, I'm sure you get to build on it, too.
Right.
You know,
that is what it means to apportion the possessions that we have gained. And it's also, you can also look at it and say, oh, it's even the here and now. What's the greatest possession on this planet today? What's the most valuable asset on this planet? Torah. And so to share with the Torah, and the Torah is inclusive of the prophets and the Psalms because it's all teaching, to share what it says, to apportion what it says, is a great joy.
Of course. Yeah.
For indeed, you have cast away the yoke of his economic burden from his back, along with the means to extend the reach and influence of the ruling authorities wielding a staff, a scepter, and a spear, with regard to those who would strive to exploit him, exerting their influence over him. Now, Moshe had to be retired to be able to vote this time. And Yahweh had to keep all of the undue religious and political and military influences at bay, and they have a long reach. Today, to be able to invest 10 hours a day, 6 days a week into this, you've got to have the burden of having to earn a living. And if you have, you know, saved enough or you just have the ability to devote the time, you've still got to protect the individual from the overreaching influence of patriotism and politics and religion in this society.
Yeah. It's a tough road to hoe.
Right. So, I was saying, you know, the job I want done necessitates me helping this individual out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to help this individual out by removing the burden of him having to work elsewhere so he can focus on the job that I want to do with him. And I'm going to keep religious and political and military influences, patriotic influences at bay. His word will do the rest.
Yeah.
So similar to the day of Medin, Midian. Surely, since every boot worn by the trampling soldiers of marching armies is part of the commotion and clamor of battle, the staccato percussion of weapons, and the fearful response to it all, along with the clothing which is befouled by wallowing in blood, they will all come to exist as fuel, to be burned up in the blazing fire of light.
There goes patriotism. There goes military.
There goes patriotism. You don't want to be wearing a uniform. You don't want to have, you know, boots on the ground. You don't want to have boots on the ground. You don't want to be in uniform. You don't want to be supporting a military. You don't want to be honoring the military. You don't want to be in the military. And you don't want to know anybody in the military.
No.
God's going to obliterate them. Now, that also tells you, if you want to understand this particular day, you need to look at the Day of Midian. And in this chapter, and for another time, we devote probably 20, 30 pages just to the story of the day, who Midian was and what Gideon was and who the Midianites were.
It happens very fast, too.
What happened?
I mean, so it's a very good example because it didn't take any time at all when he gathered them all up and wiped them all out. It was just,
correct.
They all met, you know, they all came for him and he wiped them out. That's exactly what's going to happen in 2030.
And while he did wipe them all out, which means God's not interested in changing people's attitudes, he's not interested in saving them, he's wiped them all out. Yeah, you are, and they were harming his children. They were threatening his children. They were harming his children. They were starving his children. They were killing his children. So he held them accountable. He wiped them all out. Now, that is the conclusion of the story. The story is two chapters in Shaphat Judges.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about the story is, let's see, Yahweh is consistent. How many people did he solicit to take care of this problem? How many people did he talk to?
One.
Now, that one ended up with
at least 300.
A number of people. Yeah, 300 people worked with him, which is probably the number we have in our covenant family now, too.
Probably so.
And of course, the big deciding factor as to who was going to be with him and who was not is, were they afraid around God? And the answer is yes, goodbye. Did they bow down?
No.
And the answer is yes, goodbye. Bye. In fact, the first one was, do you really want to be here?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is
no.
Goodbye.
Okay, well, you're dismissed.
Yeah, so really, the story of Gideon and the day of the Midianites is told because of all of the lessons along the way. There are so many wonderful lessons around the way. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's just, it's really us, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is.
I mean, this is right on the money.
Yeah, I mean, no matter where you look, whether it was Moshe and where he met them on the day of Midian with the Midianites, or if it's the day of Midian, he's talking about us. Now, I do want to, before we get into 9:6 and 9:7, because that's what's coming next, I want to make some points. Okay? The first of those points is that Yeshayahu 9:6 and 9:7 telescope time. Now, that should not be surprising. Yahweh sees time simply as time, as it all, the past, present, and future, he can see at one time if he wishes to. He can see the future and the past and the future. Time simply exists for Yahweh.
Yeah.
And so he's going to present in 9, 6, and 7, 3,000 years, and not even going to have a hiccup between the events over 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we should see 9, 6, and 9, 7 as time telescoped and not broken apart, but just with this contraction of time. Next is how many individuals are spoken about in 9, 6, and 7?
One.
Masculine singular, right?
Right.
Is it the individual that Christians have been led to believe?
I can't find him there.
I can't either.
Honest to goodness, I can't find him. I haven't got up to 9, 7 yet. Of course, you know, except a quick glance. 9, 6, I've just jumped everywhere I could jump. And is he there?
He ain't there. No.
No,
the person really that is in 9-6 is an ordinary mortal man with an extraordinary mission.
Right.
9-6, by the way, and 9-7 should not have been separated.
No, I understand.
In fact, the 9-6, the last statement in 9-6, the sentence continues in 9-7.
Oh, right into 9-7.
Yeah, it rolls right into it.
It just happened to be about the place where I ran out of time before I had to go.
Yeah. Fifth. In Hebrew, nouns, or adjectives, I should say, follow nouns. Kodesh. The adjective is Kodesh, set apart. The noun is Ruach, spirit. So we don't say spirit set apart in English. English, we say set apart spirit. So if you're dealing with Hebrew, you've got to recognize that the adjectives follow the nouns, and to convert it into English, you need to put the adjective before the noun.
Right.
Yeah, almost every place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the translators know to do that. Here, they didn't do it. And you have to say, why didn't they do it here? Because it ruined their chance of creating their religious myth if they did it. All right, next is that Shem is more than a name. There's only one name. In that whole list, there's actually two groups of seven attributes. There's a group of seven attributes for 3,000 years ago. There's a group of seven attributes for 16 years from now. So two groups of seven attributes. But Shem also means renown and reputation. So this person's reputation will be in the things that we'll consider in a moment.
Okay.
Seventh, there is no lower and uppercase lettering in Hebrew, and thus no way to distinguish a proper name or a title from any other word or descriptive phrase by capitalization. So when we capitalize names and titles in English, like they do, they'll make it Almighty Father, capitalized.
Yes, yeah.
That's not what it says. No.
No.
And in Hebrew, too, there is a possessive. It's just that it's not done with punctuation. So these things are important to know when we're diving into this. So here we go, Kirk. And we're going to take 9-6 in sections because there's a lot to say. The first part begins key. Key means it's key starts a lot of sentences in Hebrew. It means for indeed, truly because. It follows. Let's emphasize this statement. What is revealed after this is important, and it is presenting a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
For indeed, a child, Yeled, a boy. Yeled is an ordinary son, a male infant who grows up to be a young man.
Mm-hmm.
It is from the verbal root, Yalad, is brought forth. Yeled would apply to every human in history. Now, that would even include Adam. Now, the verb that follows, Yalad, would exclude Adam, but would include every other person.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeled, an ordinary child, a male infant, who's going to be, by the way, the infant, we have to be careful here. Yeled is there's a lot of Hebrew words for child and boy and son. Yeled speaks of the time period from infancy and toddler and adolescence, teenage years, all the way up to what would be considered an adult. Yeah, and traditionally in Hebrew society, you're an adult at 30. So this is from birth to 30 years old, he was a Yelet, an ordinary boy. Was born Yelad. This isn't conceived of a virgin. This wasn't begotten by God. This is Yelet. It means was conceived and brought forth through a woman impregnated by the father of the child. Everyone but Adam was.
You know what I found in this little section right here? Besides most of the stuff that you write about, which was on the money, but that little phrase where it says, Yelad Lanu.
Yeah.
May be butchering it, but, you know.
Yes, Yelad Yelad.
I found a thing that said, this is found, this actual phrase is only found three times. So I decided, well, I ought to go look up those three times. Child is found hundreds of times, but this phrase.
Yeah.
And I found out that in Jeremiah, it is a delightful child, and they're talking about Ephraim, a human.
Uh-huh.
In Ecclesiastics, he's talking about, that's about Solomon, wise
uh-huh.
and poor child. It's better when he says that it's better to be a wise and poor child. A poor child is wise than to be a foolish king.
Right.
And then the other one was, of course, Yeshayahu 9:6, where the child is born. And now,
uh-huh.
if the first two are humans,
mm-hmm.
How could that turn
ordinary.
Into yeah, ordinary humans? How could 9:6 turn into spiritual human?
Right, something else. Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be some clue in there for that to happen, and it's just not there.
Right. This was
so, I mean, any way I look at it.
This was written in the pool, perfect passive. The object passively suffers the effect of the birth for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect means this child was not a child, did not live as a child forever. This is not an eternal being. It's perfect, not imperfect, not ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So a child was born among us and near us, La Ananu, to us, before us, on our behalf, and concerning our approach. An ordinary male descendant, a son, the offspring of a mother and father, a masculine child, was Nathan, provided and placed, was given, set, appointed, and bestowed, devoted, and then brought before us. Now, this is Nathan. Now, Nathan was written in the Nipple Perfect Passive. Now, the perfect doesn't always mean that something happened in the past. But it means that it is not happening in the present. It is really uncomfortable to translate the perfect as is, because is in the present suggests ongoing, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it is less, but it's also uncomfortable to say will be. A child will be, because will be also doesn't have a finite period of time. In the past, the action is completed. This was written in the perfect. This son was not provided forever.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I understand.
So it was written in the Niffle Perfect. This, the subject, the son, represents the gift. It provides the provision and the benefits of the appointment, some of which occurs passively and all of which is limited in time. So a son was provided in place. Nathan is provided, placed, given, set, appointed, bestowed, devoted, and then brought.
Mm-hmm.
La Anahu. Before us. Now, was as it relates to Yahusha, you have two problems. Is that if you want this to apply to Yahusha, you've got, as I say, you've got two issues. One is ordinary child, ordinary birth, and it's written in the perfect, which strongly suggests that it has happened and that it is not an infant. Ongoing gift.
The child has a limited life. The son has a limited life.
Mm-hmm.
At least to us. As the child is set before us and placed before us, the life is limited. So, you're in trouble with Yahusha here. Now, for Yahweh to call one person out and said a son was provided and placed before us, who did Yahweh refer to as his son? I am his son, and he is my son, and I am his father.
I am his father. Yeah, that's dope, yeah. Of course.
Okay. Now, Yahweh, if we can believe the Christian New Testament, said of Yahusha, he is my son. Did Yahweh say, and I am his father?
No.
No. He only said of one person, I am his father, he is my son. That would be dope.
Mm-hmm.
But besides Yahusha, which we only know from the Christian New Testament, at least from the son point of view,
mm-hmm.
How many people did God call his son such that this could be speaking of them?
I think you've just hit the only two.
Yeah. And particularly if he's talking about a son that is important for us to know, that is a declaration of something that's extraordinarily important, there's only one.
Yeah, so it's a monumental gift we're talking about here. So.
Right, yeah, a monumental gift that's
ordinary
place for us.
Yeah.
Right. Note.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move to the next
strike one.
Next part of this. No.
Okay.
It says, and this is Ha Misra. Now, every English translation says, and the government will continue to exist on his shoulder, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, and the government. You would think that if all of them said government, that Misra, because that's the word, it's Ha Misra, that Misra would be used a lot of places and that you could verify either through its root or through its use that it was speaking of the government. How many places do you find Ha Misra? I mean, you track down Yaled Yalad. How many places do you find Ha Misra? How many find just Ha Misra? Two is the answer. The word appears twice.
Two?
Two.
Okay.
Two. How many times does it appear between 9:6 and 9:7? Two.
What? Two. Oh,
two.
Oh, okay. Okay, I beg your pardon. You're right. You're right.
Two. So 100% of where you see this word, it's in this context. Therefore, can it be defined outside of this context?
No, this is kind of it.
No, this is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see anything that's government related around here?
No.
No. Okay. Are you familiar with the Hebrew word MY, which would be the in fact it's the first two letters of Mikra. It's what changes Kara to Mikra. Transliterated MI, it's written MY. But it tells us to ponder the who, what, and why of something.
Mm-hmm.
To reflect on the who, what, and why of something is what the me means. And how about Sarah?
Sarah, yeah.
Ever heard of a Sarah? Do we have a Sarah out there that might be important?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
We do, don't we?
Yes, yeah, we do.
We've got a couple appearances of Sarah. We've got the mother of the covenant. Her name was Sarah, right?
Right.
We have the verb Sarah. And we have Sarah in the midst of Israel. Israel.
Yeah, Israel. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of Sarahs out there. And we know that the MI prefix tells us to ponder the who, what, and why of something. Well, Sarah means to engage in, to endure.
Well, persist.
To be empowered by.
Persevere. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wrestle. Yeah.
So if you're going to look at the verbal root, it can't be the government. It's the means to engage and endure. And the whole concept with regard to the person being written about and what we should desire to learn from his mindset while simultaneously encouraging us to question the who, what, why, and how of our empowerment and liberation,
mm-hmm.
of our ability to persist and persevere. Or, alternatively, if you were to believe the English translations, the government, the dominion, or kingship. Now, it's a contraction of me, which means to question, and Sarah, that means to persist, persevere, and endure, engage in content, to be liberated, exerting oneself powerfully, and to be let loose and set free, as well as to be empowered. Now, Kirk, I went through this. Let's just say that political, religious individuals that wanted their governments to endure and therefore wanted God to endorse an everlasting government were right in that it's government. His government to exist.
Yeah.
Did Yosha have a government?
Never did. He said, I'm your father. You don't need anything else.
Right. Yosha did not have a government.
No. He had no plan for a government.
That don't have
no
a government?
Army? No.
Was there any other son of God who was a king? No, it's just don't.
Well,
so if it is government, then the child who was born and the son who was given is Dode. End of case. Argument over.
Yeah, therefore, yeah.
So if they're right and it's government, we prevail. We are right. They're wrong. This is not speaking of Yosha. Yosha did not have a government.
Yeah. So where can you get Yosha there? Because there's no history of him involved in any of this.
Correct.
And so
if they're right in its government, and they have no basis for that other than their desire to have God endorse an eternal government, then it isn't Yosha. It isn't Christianity. It's Dode. Now, if it is Dode, and it is government, what was the constitution of Dode's government?
The Torah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if you're Christian, you're screwed.
If it is government, you're screwed, blue, and tattooed.
I mean, it's just over. You're done. But it's not.
Now, those are not word games. I mean, that's just, you can't get much more logical than that.
Mm-mm. It's really straightforward if you're open-minded and willing to be rational.
Yeah.
Well, I studied the contraction, me, Sarah. And what it means is, and the means to engage and endure. With regard to the person being written about, and what we should desire to learn from his mindset, while simultaneously encouraging us to question the who, what, why, and how of our empowerment and liberation, our ability to persist and persevere, was and shall continue to be, Haya, has been, is, and will actually be, with ongoing implications, called imperfect active, with unfolding consequences over time. Now, Ha Shechem, they want, and it's Ha Shechem who? I don't have an issue that says that it can't be upon his shoulder, except for the fact that he didn't shoulder these things. Therefore, I did not translate his shoulder. I looked at what other things does Al Shechem to convey. Just all I did. Is there a definition or definitions of this word that apply here that make sense in this context as opposed to our nonsense in this context? Because, by the way, it wasn't on Yosha's shoulder either.
No.
Wasn't on either of their shoulders. So what else can Shechem represent? Well, I looked it up. What is Shechem? It's a continued succession of events, is Shechem. It's which transpire on a ridgeline, in conjunction with and on account of repetitive work, the eagerness and the passion to pursue one's calling, especially early in life.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to bring in shoulder, it would be the passion to shoulder and not shirk responsibility on his elevated mountain range, being diligent, persistent, willing, and enthusiastic. It is from Shechem, the verb, which is the ability to rise up early in the day,
early in the morning,
passionately pursue one's work, and to do something over and over again. Well, how about them apples? Is there a connection between goat and a ridgeline?
I think so.
Yeah. Zion, Moriah, his home at the bottom of the ridgeline, Yahweh's at the top. Right?
Yes.
Zion, Moriah, everything Doe did of consequence occurred on that ridgeline. Did Doe do something over and over again? Would you qualify 100 different songs? If you wrote 100 different songs, would that qualify as over and over again?
That would qualify as quite a lot, yes. That's pretty
Isn't
continuous.
Considered about Dode, ourselves over and over again, that Dode early in his life, when he was a young man, that's when he wrote all of these things, and that when he became empowered, when he became, had all of the pleasures of life and, the harem and the big fancy home and all of the riches. He was having to use Gad and Nathan and other people to speak to God, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Every one of those psalms was written early in his life, wasn't it? And isn't Doe's familiarity, his Yahweh's overall enthusiasm for this man, this man's passion?
Yeah, it pays off to be hungry, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, how do we keep from seeing everything Dode and Al-Shakamhu upon the continued succession of events which transpired on his ridgeline?
There's nothing you can get Yosha in that either.
No.
I mean, I'm kind of doing a little overview. Every time we're talking and I'm reading, and most of the time over here I wrote Dode with a circle, Dode with a circle, Dode with a circle, Dode.
Right. I mean, this is if you want to underscore Dode, it's the city of Dode. Mm-hmm. What he did on Moriah, buying the threshing floor
from the
Yabusi.
Yabusi.
Runa the Yabusi. Accumulating everything to build Yahweh's house, building his home there, celebrating Yahweh with all these marvelous psalms right there on the ridgeline. His ridgeline. City of Dode. The succession of events as he would write his mizmor. So... Boy, we really now have something that's extraordinary with Dode. So then, with regard to the person being written about, the means to engage and endure, to be empowered and liberated, should we desire to learn from his mindset, was and shall continue to exist as part of the continued succession of events which transpired on his ridgeline, and in conjunction with his repetitive work, the eagerness in which he pursued his calling early in life, and his passion to shoulder and not shirk responsibility. I don't want to go through the whole list, but, I wrote that King David, unfortunately his name is corrupted, but has got to be one of the best known and most respected people in human history. And I was saying, other than the misnomer Jesus, who would be better known and more significant in human history than Dode? And so I said, Dode has to be. And I said, I better be careful. I better look this up.
Not even
Time Magazine has their Man of the Year, and Time Magazine put together, their editorial board put together a list of the 100 most influential people and best known people of all time. You know where Dode shows up on that list?
Does he? Does he make the top 100?
He is 57.
48, somewhere 50?
He is 57.
Halfway down?
Yeah. He is behind the likes of Muhammad, Akiba,
really?
Maimonides, Buddha, Confucius, and Paul. Julius and Augustus Caesar, Hadrian, Nero. It goes on and on and on. As a matter of fact, he is behind Plato, Aristotle, Alexander, Napoleon, Shakespeare, Henry VIII, Louis the 14th, Victoria, Elizabeth, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Lincoln, Da Vinci, Columbus, Luther,
not
Newton,
so much longer.
Darwin, Einstein, Marx, Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, King David ranks 57th behind everybody. In addition to, he's listed after Charlemagne, Theodore Roosevelt, Mozart, Beethoven, Ulysses S. Grant, the murderous drunk, Carl Linares, Ronald Reagan, Charles Dickens, Benjamin Franklin, George W. Bush. George W. Bush is a more significant individual, according to Time Magazine's editorial board, than King David.
Did they come up with it, or did they try to?
Yeah, this is their list.
Well,
they, you know, they did their surveys just to find out.
Yeah, they always did. Man of the Year.
William Churchill, Genghis Khan, Charles I, Thomas Edison, King James I, Nevsky, FDR, Freud, Hamilton, Gandhi, Woodrow Wilson, oh my God, Bach, Galileo, Cromwell, Madison, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe. Do you know that he is behind Joseph Smith and Adam Smith? Is it any wonder the world screwed up?
Yes.
You know, Moses, Norton, Adam, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Jacob, Joshua, Samuel, Solomon, Isaiah, Hosea, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Elijah. I'm just going to keep it in English so people would know what I'm talking about. Daniel or Zechariah. Ahead of them all, according to the editorial staff of Time Magazine, they revere King George III, Immanuel Kant, James Cook, John Adams, Richard Wagner, Tchaikovsky, Voltaire, Andrew Jackson, Constantine, Socrates, Elvis Presley, William the Conqueror, John Kennedy, St. Augustine, Van Gogh, Copernicus, Vladimir Lenin, Robert E. Lee, Oscar Wilde, Charles II, Cicero, Francis Bacon, Richard Nixon, the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, catch this, King Arthur.
King Arthur.
Ahead of Moses.
Yeah.
Michelangelo, Philip II, Wolfgang Van Gogh, Ali, not Muhammad, but the founder of Sufism, Thomas Aquinas, Pope John Paul II.
Well, of course.
Nikola Tesla, Harry Truman, Joan of Arc, Dante, Otto Bismarck, Grover Cleveland, John Calvin, and John Locke. Me thinks God thinks differently. Then this is the next section of 9-6.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. It's pretty sad, and it really is. Yeah. Makes you want to vomit. Then his designation and renown, Shem, his personal and proper name and reputation, is read, recited, and designated as Kara. Should be invited and summoned as, is called out and welcomed as, is met with and proclaimed as, is known and reckoned as, and was read aloud and announced as. Call perfect. A counselor providing advice which is astoundingly brilliant and extraordinarily insightful. Now, you'll read it, wonderful counselor, but wait a minute.
Yeah.
Got to reverse them to properly position the noun and the adjective. So it is, he was a counselor providing advice, a consultant who offers directions and thought-provoking guidance for us to deliberate, an analyst who proposes and reveals the purpose of the plan, a mentor who speaks out and urges those who listen to follow the directions and thinking he is presenting because it is reasonable and valuable, Pele, which is outstanding, brilliant, extraordinarily insightful, set apart, separating, powerful and fantastic, prophetic, and consistently fulfilled.
Now, I was able to find all of those in from some very simple sources, so...
Mm-hmm.
No, it's no stretch there at all. Nothing.
So, he's not saying wonderful counselor as if Jesus is the living embodiment of the Trinity and is also the Holy Spirit, is he?
Yeah. No, how about just extraordinary?
This is not the Ruach Kodesh. It says this guy provides really good advice. What is the purpose of Dodd's Proverbs and Psalms?
So that we can understand. I mean, you could say Moshe gave you, told us about the Moed Negros, he told us about the terms and conditions, the Mizwa, but the understanding of it and how to take advantage of it is Dodd.
Yeah, and by the way,
yeah.
Yahweh provided all of that.
Well, I mean, he took the
patient.
I'm just saying.
Moshe simply said, you know, I'm going to repeat things that are in the in Bereshit and in Shemoth and are in called out.
Yes.
I'm going to repeat some of this because I want you to remember it.
Yes.
And then I'm going to speak about what it means to me and what it should mean to you.
Mm-hmm.
So Devarim is in Moshe's words. The rest of it is not.
Yes, I'm staying corrected. That's what I'm telling you.
But with Dodd's Psalms, they're in his words as inspired by Yahweh.
Yeah, he was not taking dictation. He was
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, Dodd is offering his advice. He is. He's offering his advice as he was inspired and as he lived with Yahweh. Moshe's not offering his advice. Moshe's underscoring Yahweh's advice.
No, he spent 80 years without Yahweh.
I mean, if you wanted to encapsulate who Dodd was, he was the most marvelous and insightful and brilliant advisor of all time.
That's what he was.
So this should not be looked at as a divine attribute. This should be looked at as that this is a guy who is renowned for providing really, really good advice.
Hmm. No question.
No question about that. Now the next one is El Gibor.
Yeah.
But Gibor, which is translated and not translated, it's changed to Almighty God. You know the Hebrew word El. You know what the Hebrew word El means?
Well, it doesn't have to mean God. It could be a mighty one, a powerful one, a strong one.
Yeah, it means
like
mighty.
Man of rank.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, El means mighty one or almighty. So if, in fact, Gibor meant almighty, it would be almighty, almighty.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're gonna translate both words, if you think that Gibor means almighty, then what he just said was almighty, almighty.
Yeah.
That was my first clue. When I was doing this, no, this is not working here because what does El mean? And I wrote it, Almighty, Mighty One. And I said, no.
That can't be.
No. Come on. It can't mean Almighty God because that would be, if you're going to translate it, Almighty, Almighty. But then you look up and said, well, Gibor, we've come across Gibor 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
It's all over the place. When we were dealing with the Nephilim, we came across
Gibor. Enoch and all that stuff, yeah.
Right. You know, Gibor speaks of an individual who is valiant and heroic, mm-hmm. prominent standing in the community,
mm-hmm.
a powerful person who prevails, a champion confirming the influence and the strengthening nature of something.
Mm-hmm.
A Gibor is often a soldier. A hero. Dodd was a soldier.
Yeah.
He was a hero. He was a powerful individual politically. He prevailed. But he was also a champion, confirming the influence and strengthening nature of God.
God, a powerful champion, yep.
Right. So Gibor El is a valiant and heroic individual with a prominent standing in the community, confirming the influence and strengthening nature of God. That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that this individual is Almighty God.
No. And that was my first clue when I did it. I said, okay, that can't be. So I spent a lot of time with El, which is really just an aleph and a lamb, which is a shepherd's staff and a head of the flock, the head, the alpha,
right,
if you would, ram,
right,
and leader. So, so then you flesh it all out, and it's exactly that.
Gabor speaks of an individual, a powerful individual, an influential individual, and the second one is the Almighty, the title God.
And in all cases, a total human being. That's something spiritual.
Like Gabor. Yeah. Gabor is always a human being. Matter of fact, when you look up Gabor, a couple of the really, there's a couple of lexicons that are kind of subtle. And it says, under Gabor, it says, there are those who have come to the conclusion that the nature of Gabor strongly suggests that it is talking about an individual and not about deity. What was your first clue, Sherlock? But they actually wrote that.
Well, good for them.
But others would prefer it to apply it to the divinity and see the Messiah in it.
Yeah. I have read some commentary like that, too, this week. Yeah, it does say that.
But was Yosha a warrior? Was he engaged and powerful politically? Was he influential in the government?
Mm-hmm.
No, and no.
Well, not all those things?
Absolutely.
He became the king of Israel, and the leader of Israel.
Yeah, and a military leader. And a political leader. Yeah.
Yeah.
Courageous hero that God actually endorsed. He was the valiant and heroic individual with a prominent standing in the community of God. That's what it means.
Yeah.
You're talking about an ordinary, ordinary in the sense of was born the ordinary way, was an ordinary man, with an extraordinary role, mission, and capacity for understanding and communication is who we're talking about here. He is the eternal witness. This is Ad, which in Ad and Ed in Hebrew, there's no distinction in the text, is there?
No.
So Ad means eternal. Ed means everlasting testimony.
Yeah, perpetuity.
So he is, eternal witness, sharing evidence, which is enduring.
Right.
Conveying information regarding the perpetual and continued existence of the Father. So what is he? He is not the eternal Father. He is the eternal witness of the Father. Ed, you've got to take the time to look at witness. That's the guy, one of the most important parts of translation. You want to get it right. You've got to look at what words prior to the random and sometimes deliberate, Masoretic diacritical markings, what just the letters themselves convey.
Mm-hmm.
And the overwhelming preponderance of the time that you read Ed, it is speaking of everlasting testimony, eternal witness. So this the eternal Father. This is an eternal witness of the Father.
Well, I hate that you sound like a broken record. That's what I got, and you're right. That's what I got, and you're right. So
now, to be fair, I have I've translated this two or three times in the past, and I was so indoctrinated, so influenced by my Christian upbringing that, I went along with the program. If you look at any lexicon, you'll find a justification for going along with the program because all of those lexicons, all the Hebrew dictionaries are published by the same people who publish the Bible translations, and they deliberately justify. And so unless you got your thinking cap on and said, wait a minute here, this doesn't work, and you say, I really want to just say, what is the best and most accurate and complete definition of each word, you don't get here. This. How much time did you spend on 9-6, Kirk?
2 days, just about every moment I could. To my, I mean, I've got serious back trouble now. From sitting there, it's just,
Two days.
Yeah.
It's work, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You got to.
Well, I mean, if I was smart and I had time to do it early, I would have done it earlier, but. It was.
I wish I had done it.
One thing I wanted to do is because I was reading emails back and forth, and then you'd say, okay, I'm going to rewrite this, and I'd say, well, if he's changing his mind, I better sit down and really flesh this out as best I know how, and so I can take a stand one way or the other. And then, quite frankly, the more I can say, well, if he's changed back to this, could be both as opposed to just Dode,
right,
then it should be an overwhelming amount of evidence. And there to do it,
yeah.
And I just tell you, anybody who's listening, it ain't there. This is dope. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, I started this wanting it to be just Yosha because, you know, it sounds like a prophecy regarding Yosha, and I'd always thought it'd be that. And that
way it's written. The way it's written.
That's just fine. Yeah, that's just fine.
It's easy to follow that.
It's fine with me. And I started off with that. And then I said, wait a minute, there's some things here that don't work for Yosha, but they certainly seem to fit Dode. And then I went a little further and said, wait a minute, the way this is written and the way it's translated doesn't seem to fit either of them. You know, who in the world are they talking about? I said, you know, I need just to shelf this. I need to step back and I need to open my mind up,
mm-hmm.
get rid of all the clutter and everything I've been told, and let's just go from the beginning and let's analyze every word one at a time, and let's eliminate the things that don't work. And let's move towards what does work. And so, I had to go through it the third time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same thing with questioning Paul. You know, I went in trying to validate Paul and I said, whoa.
We were there with you on that one. So,
this just doesn't work. Yeah. This does not work. That's not where the words lead. And the same thing was true here. I went, I tried to make it Yosha. It doesn't work. I try to make it Yosha, and it only works when it's Dode.
Well, after I put it down, go ahead. No. Continue, though. Sorry.
I was just going to say, once you realize that it's only Dode, you now have the single most overwhelming blow.
It's a death blow.
That you could possibly wield against the religion of Christianity. Their one proof text. And the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is ripped from them in every possible way. It's an ordinary child with an ordinary life involved in an extraordinary mission that does not make him divine.
No.
That is all about the means to engage and endure with God. It's focused on the covenant. It's focused on the Torah. It's focused on the man that God said, this is my beloved son. And we're looking at the man God loved, not because he was good. Not because
right.
he was perfect.
That's correct.
And
when
even says that in 7, it concludes with that.
Yeah. When we went to Enoch, and we were talking about spirits and this and tearing a hole in that giant stuff.
Yeah.
Spirits can't reproduce with human beings.
Right.
Why would you, so? In this, it could be all wet here, but why would we expect that Yosha was spiritually impregnated somehow?
I can tell you the reason that the myth surrounding.
Well, I know why the Christians used it, and why the Canaanites, from the Canaonites and the Babylonians and all that.
Look, right. Every religion
to do that.
The god was born of a virgin. The Lord, Baal, was born of a virgin from a god named El, and he was the same as Tammuz, was the same as Bel in Babylon. All of the gods of the pagans were virgin born. So if you're going to have a god that's going to compete with the son of the sun,
you're going to have
a virgin born. Got to be virgin born. That's why the myth came about. But that has God, a spiritual being, impregnating a woman. It's grotesque.
Yeah.
It's grotesque. Why would he do that? You know, the thing that makes us like God, the thing that makes us God's children, is being spiritually reborn by way of the set-apart spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't God do the same thing with Yosha? As the son of a gun, that's what you witness. That's what the testimony says. And by the way, if you look at Yashaya, there are two places in Yashaya that specifically tell us that that is how Yosha becomes the diminished manifestation of God, is that at a point in his life, the set-apart spirit comes upon him.
Mm-hmm.
We're told straight out.
And if you're doing a comparative study, and you're looking at Yahusha, you have, and you coined it, you're the first one I think I ever heard to say that, you know, his job description, he's using a mission statement
as
his name rather than a name.
Right.
And if you, in that context, when you're thinking about Yahweh saves, you know, and what he's doing, that's not, he's not a shepherd.
Right. No.
You know, he's just, if you go through list after list, is he had one job to do.
Right.
He really got mad at
fulfill the first four mikra.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's absolutely instrumental in the first and the second one. Ruach Kodesh is enabling him to get out of there and become Bukurim.
Although on Bukurim, you know, his soul, again, united with the set-apart spirit, provides a tremendous witness of what it's going to be like.
But it's kind of a joint effort there where his whole thing was to do this job. He was not about what Dode was about.
Correct.
We have no written in what's occurred to
and it was, by the way, it was to do the job, not to brag about the job.
That's right.
Not to explain the job. The purpose of explaining the job was Moshe's and
Zohar. It's already done.
The purpose of telling us how to capitalize on that mission is Dode and the Mizmor. And and the purpose of just carrying it out, doing it, for a guy that doesn't like to brag, which would be Yahweh, was Yosha.
Mm-hmm.
Yosha was he's going to do the deed. Moshe is going to explain the purpose of the deed. And Dode is the guy in the middle and said, well, let me explain how this all works and how you capitalize on it.
Yeah.
It's not
a radical thinking or some oddball approach here. This exactly fits the nature of both Yahweh and Yosha and Dode.
Yeah, what you find when you read this is, from God's perspective, the single most important person who's ever lived is Dode. Now, could God have done all this without Dode? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't his purpose. His purpose is to build a family and to work with and engage with his creation, and Dode was just his favorite person to do this with. By far, his most beloved son.
You know, I was thinking the only reason that Yosha healed so many people and did so many wonderful things, if the Ruach Kodesh in his feminine form, like a mother, and moves among his people, Israel, the people he loves, he couldn't help but grant some of their requests when they came to him. But he really wasn't about doing that. I mean, I know you said that. And I thought, But it's really just...
always said, why are you bugging me? What is it you want?
Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you what. And it was a very
don't
little
number
of people, actually. I'll do this. Don't tell anybody about it. And I'll do it as only for one reason, so that if you think about it, if I can do this, which is fairly meaningless...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you ought to look to me for something that is meaningful.
Really important.
Yeah.
Your soul.
Yeah, your soul. Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. Yeah, it just devastates Christianity because this is not about Jesus. It's not about a person being born as God. It's not about the person being representing the fullness of the Godhead. It just all goes away. And it shows God in the context and of this prophecy of talking about what he is going to do to the political and religious establishment and how he's going to come back as light. Every bit of this yeah, it just excludes Yosha and focuses on Dode, and Dode focused on Yahweh's Torah. So he's a living embodiment of the of what it means to be a part of God's covenant family.
So to diminish really the Torah is are you nuts? I mean, to knock this stuff, are you nuts?
Yeah, but now I'm going to tell you something. For the this is profound, and we're only a quarter of the way through it.
Yes.
You know, so we'll return to it next week. Well, this is profound. You know what part of the chapter I actually enjoyed the most? Was trying
Gideon?
To. I thought that that by taking that goy and making it a single person, that I'm in a lot of trouble here.
That idea.
I am going to, because when I talked about the other place where God's going to raise up a banner, and I said if it's not to these books and what we're doing, then what in the world is it? And I'm getting a lot of flack for that,
really?
particularly as I rendered because it's either a horse with fast rolling chariot wheels and a horse with knife like hooves that's really fast, or he's talking about an airplane. I've gotten a lot of just feedback. I'm getting a lot of pushback on that, and so to come up again with what he says. This boy, and this is what I'm going to do for this boy. I'm in really serious trouble here. So I've rewritten this part. So if you've read that chapter in the first three or four versions I sent out of it, please throw it away, because I've gone back through it and said, all right, this is what it says. I'm not at liberty to change it. This is just what it says. And then part of the chapter that's so much fun is God says, okay, you want to understand what's going to follow. Check out Midian. And so the first thing about Midian is, well, the last time that God wanted to communicate his name and his word to his people and wanted to liberate them from the influence of government and religion, he went out to one guy.
Yeah.
And when you look at the qualifications for that guy, which was none, but the situation of that guy, well, it sounds like that same goy again. Now, he wasn't a goy, but it sounds like the same kind of individual. Why would you expect God to change?
Yeah.
And then you do the day of Midian, and you find, son of a gun, it's the same story all over. One guy, this is the mission I want.
Crawls out of it.
And it doesn't matter what your qualifications are, because your qualifications are irrelevant.
Who said that matters.
Yeah.
Who's been saying that for 16 years? I'm irrelevant.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so it was seeing all of this explained in the stories related to Midian that I thought was the most fun.
Yeah.
I just thought that was grand.
That
great,
great
fun.
Parallel. That's a
yeah,
great
it is.
Parallel.
It really is great fun. And, of course, the story with both Moshe and with Gideon is that others would join them. Yeah, others would join them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, why are you getting flack? Are they questioning the stuff? Because, it's pretty straightforward.
Oh,
is somebody just jealous or something?
It's creating quite a stir. There's two stirs that are going around right now. That's one of them, as I understand it. I don't care. So it's not. I'm not saying this in a defensive way.
No, I understand.
And we have distanced ourselves from most of the, in fact, probably now from all of the real irritants. So that when it's a stir, it's done in good natured fun. So it's not an attack. I don't want to infer that. The other is two covenant members have are. Pursuing a theory that is intriguing. I'm not sure I agree with them, but they've got a theory that the soul of Dode and the soul of Yosha is the same soul.
Yeah,
They are the same person, just separated by time. And it's an interesting theory. They've given lots of reasons for it. I'm fascinated by it. I've enjoyed reading their discussions. My issue is that a soul carries with it our unique character, and I see to whatever we can see into Yosha in terms of the way he responded to people. I really see the character of Yahweh. But I just see, and I don't think, you know, that Yosha's soul is Yahweh's soul in the sense that our soul is the, you know, the essence of who we are. Yahweh, the essence of who Yahweh is independent of his soul. He had a soul for the purpose of Yosha. Now, did he have a soul for the purpose of Dode too? Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. And could it be the same soul? I guess. But, you know, I look at Yosha and what we can read about him, particularly in the words of Dode, and I see somebody that's just representing Yahweh's personality, style, approach, all that sort of thing. He hates the religious people. He gives them no quarter at all. He's funny. He's in your face. You know, he's not trying to save everybody. You know, that's who I see in it. And while I recognize that from the time he was born to the time that he was 30 years old and the Spirit came upon him, he was not perfect.
No.
He became perfect because he observed the Torah the way it was designed to be observed, and the Torah makes us perfect.
Right.
Now, but you see with Dode, you see a soldier, man of war, focused on that stuff, a guy with a harem that, you know, really loved the girls, a guy that lived in a really, really fancy big house. You see a guy that that personality-wise is very different than Yosha. Mm-hmm. And so that's my issue with them having the same soul, is to the degree that the soul defines our personality and encapsulates our personality. I see them as fairly different.
Well, why isn't it not the fact that you would think, here's a soul and here's a soul. This one has a very huge dose of the Ruach Kodesh. I mean, he's inspired. Dode didn't write this stuff. And Yosha is inspired up to a mega.
Right.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, why would you not expect to find the character of Yahweh with the Ruach Kodesh in you like that?
Of course.
I mean,
of course.
So what they
both said, if you look at what they said, what they conveyed, it's the same. So if you look at what they said, you'll find exactly the same, but I don't think that's a function of their personality.
I think that's because of the association with the Ruach Kodesh.
I agree. That's my
And they were both brilliant students of the Torah.
Right.
So they
If they had the same soul, then Yosha would simply be borrowing Dode's soul, because it's Dode that Yahweh was going to celebrate eternity with.
Yeah.
Not Yosha. It's Dode.
No, that would be hard.
And if they have one soul, you can't have two people with one soul. Yeah. You're not going to split that soul on an ongoing basis. And I personally don't think there's any purpose for Yosha. After Yosha fulfilled with the first three Moed Mikre, the purpose of Yosha is a physical manifestation of God. I don't see how that matters going forward.
Especially when you wipe out the universe and start again where Yahweh could participate in.
Right.
So why not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what, I agree there. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We've got a lot to cover.
So I have to throw all these away and have Terry print some more.
Yeah, I'm continuing to try to work through it. Yeah.
I knew I was going
to I'm glad I sent it out in one way.
Because
it's been food for thought, and a lot of people are examining this and thinking about all the implications of it. So that part's really good. And it's spurned lots of different conversations. That part's really good. The bad part is, when I look at, I really said a lot of things that now, in retrospect, having to go back, I wish I had written differently. And, continuing to work on it. So, anyway. I'm not trying to be perfect. I'm not a prophet. You know, I'm simply trying to convey as accurately as I can what Yahweh said, and then to share the advice that he has given, and what I have come to see is his counsel. And so, you know, that you grow, and it, thank goodness it changes. Otherwise, boy, life would be boring.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I wish I could be more help, but it's looking through it, it spurs me to go in and dig and 90% of it I find. I mean, you have some little nuances that I've got to get a little more equipment here to study with. But I tell you, it absolutely puts a nail in
yeah.
Jesus' cult.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it does.
Or it changes the entire nature. But it's totally consistent. I can't find anything that I've thought of the last 10 years and learned and where this disturbs my being or my thinking.
No, it doesn't bother me at all.
I mean,
it doesn't bother me at all. There's nothing in here that's troubling to me.
No,
it's all reinforcing and uplifting, inspiring.
So well done, my friend. Well,
yeah, I think it's really good. This is good stuff. All right, Kirk, we'll be back with you next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it here.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night. Bye-bye.